to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday morning on GCN, we expose and condemn the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, we'll open your eyes and change your mind towards each of these things upon which most people foolishly cling. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines. We will reveal the motivations of the perpetrators and share what you can do to protect your family, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage Yahweh on his terms by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah, which means teaching, not law, so that with God's guidance, you will be able to replace religion with reason. Our phone number for those who would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say is 877-300-7645. Most of the interesting stories this morning are taking place around the Middle East. That's what Yahweh told us would happen as we move towards the end days, that the focus of the world would be Israel and the Islamic nations surrounding her. Well, yesterday, King Jordan visited what's called the West Bank in a show of support for Palestinians. This article reads, stung by Israel's decision to expand settlements after their successful bid for de facto UN recognition of statehood. King Abdullah, whose country is at peace with Israel and an ally of the United States, made no immediate comment after flying by helicopter to the city of Ramallah for talks with Western-backed Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Now, this is interesting for several reasons, one of which is that while there is no such thing as a Palestinian people, and there is no such thing as a Palestinian state, these are both myths, there is enormous tribal connection and connectivity throughout the Middle East, and particularly amongst Arabs. In fact, much of what we experience in, say, Iraq and Afghanistan, much of what we witnessed in Libya, broke down on tribal grounds with tribal elders and tribal leaders and tribal militias all interacting. So Islam and the Arab race are extraordinarily tribal. And so there is a connection, a clan, if you will, amongst the majority of those who are Muslims, Arab Muslims, occupying Israel. Now, if you were to take that clan and account for all of its members, what you would find is the vast majority of those masquerading as Palestinians don't live in the West Bank or Gaza, don't live in Israel, and never have. They live in Jordan. In fact, Jordan is even a more extreme case of Syria. Now, in Syria, you have, just like we had in Iraq, a 65% majority being tyrannized by a 20 to 30% minority. In the case of the Sunni Arabs in Iraq, dominating the Shiite Persians and Arabs in that country until the United States invasion, which after that invasion, Iraq became a client of Iran because of the Shiite majority there. In Syria, the opposite is true. Two-thirds of the population is Sunni, and they're dominated by a Shia government. Well, in Jordan, you can break this down on tribal lines, and you find that more than two-thirds of the population of Jordan is aligned with the tribes most associated with the mythical people known as the Palestinians. And yet they have absolutely no say in their government. And yet this king, Abdullah, which means slave to Allah, goes and gives lip service to the so-called Palestinians and their bid to become a nation. What's stunningly hypocritical, and it's never mentioned in any news article because of the morons that write for CNN and Reuters and the BBC and the New York Times and the like, is that the West Bank was part of Jordan. And when the West Bank was part of Jordan, there was no outcry or nor any movement in Jordan or anywhere else in the Islamic world for an independent Palestinian state because there was no such thing as a Palestinian people. And the tribe that was being oppressed in the dictatorial regime of Jordan didn't care a hoot for them. As a matter of fact, the largest massacre ever of the tribe most associated with the mythical people known as the Palestinians occurred in Jordan. So for this king to go there and to say that he's all for them and against Israel for having planned to build these homes in East Jerusalem is pure hypocrisy. Moreover, there is no such thing as a president in the mythical land of the Palestinians. Mahmoud Abbas was defeated soundly. He garnered less than one-third of the votes. He is a self-proclaimed dictator over the territory known as the West Bank, which is actually Judea and Samaria. In the same part of the world, just moving a little bit south and west, Hamas's exiled leader, calling this piece of scum a leader is a stretch of the word, he will step onto Palestinian land, Reuters said. There is no such thing as a Palestinian land, moron. For the first time in 45 years on Friday, for a victory rally in the Gaza Strip. 45 years ago, outside of the scholastic community, who are genuinely in love with all things Latin, they love to give Latin names to things, picked up on the Roman myth where they renamed Judea, which had long since been the province of Judea, Palestina, after the long extent Philistines, the Philistines having been destroyed 700 years before the place was renamed by the Romans, and the name never stuck, with exception in the scholastic arena, and it only stuck there because scholars are those who know many things but understand nothing. And so there is no Palestinian land that this man could have stepped back into. And 45 years ago, the term wasn't even used. Wasn't used by any Muslim. Wasn't used by any Arab. The Islamic group leader, Khaled Misal, who has not visited since leaving the West Bank at age 11. When he left the West Bank at age 11... it was part of Jordan. He emerged emboldened from an eight-day conflict, which ended in a truce he negotiated under Egypt's auspices. He has since spoken of reaching out to other, quote-unquote, Palestinian factions, meaning he wants to reconcile with Fatah. This is a quote, "There is a new mood that allows us to achieve reconciliation," speaking of Fatah and Hamas, Mishal told Reuters in an interview last Friday from Qatar, where he has set up home since leaving Syria earlier this year. Now, if that alone doesn't cause your skin to crawl, I don't know what it would take. You see, the United States funneled billions of dollars of weaponry into Libya by way of Qatar. And I'm going to share an article from the New York Times in upcoming days that reveals that those weapons were given to fundamentalist Islamic terrorist groups. Groups like the one that assassinated our ambassador. And to view Qatar as our ally when it provides weaponry, our weaponry, to the Syrian fundamentalist jihadist, Islamic jihadist, and the Islamic jihadist in Libya, and provides sanctuary for Hamas's leader. Well, that's stupid, is the proper English word for that. Stupid. It's also hypocritical. You see, the United States went off on this great tangent and says that we will, any country that harbors known terrorists is our enemy. And yet the United States treats Qatar as an ally. He didn't move to Qatar without Qatar's permission. He was embraced by Qatar. In the this monumentous event, he went on, we read, Mr. Mashal entered Gaza from Egypt. Now, we also give Egypt over $1 billion of military aid every year. We provided Egypt with billions of dollars of guaranteed loans. And the United States treats Egypt as an ally. Well, guess where this terrorist was headquartered? After he, after the Muslim Brotherhood took over Egypt, in Egypt, in Cairo. And so he crossed into Gaza from Cairo. In a statement to the media, he said, I consider this moment my third birth, and I pray to Allah that my fourth birth will be the moment when all Palestine is liberated. This article, of course, reads, I pray to God. He didn't say God. He said Allah. Allah is not the Arabic word for God. It is the name of the Islamic God. Allah is the Arabic word for God. Beyond that, what was his statement? My fourth birth will be when all of Palestine is liberated. What does Hamas, what does Fatah, what does the PLO, what does Egypt, what does Syria, what does Jordan, what does Saudi Arabia, what does Qatar view as Palestine? They have come to accept, embrace this mythical term to mean the entirety of Israel. And so what is his cry when he enters Palestine? I want it all liberated, which means he wants to use force of arms to remove every Jew, driving them into the sea, so that Yisrael is all Islamic. Interesting when we consider the unifying factor that is the mythical place called Palestine and the mythical people called Palestinians. Typically, a myth this foolish, that there is such a place and such a people, would not be capable of causing anyone to be beguiled. But those who are religious and devoted to their religion are incapable of evaluating evidence or being reasonable. They are, to coin two words, ignorant and irrational. And so it is extraordinarily easy to fool religious people into not only believing in myths such as a place called Palestine and a people called Palestinians, you can enrage them and cause them to want to kill based upon these kinds of myths. And what we witness in the Islamic world is that Yahweh's prophecy has proven to be true, that the descendants of Ishmael, today's Muslims, are wild asses of men. Not all of them, but generally, when you look at the Muslims rioting in public squares and acting as jihadists, they're as wild and as ass-like as humanity is today. They perpetrate 99% of the world's terrorist acts. They treat women and children worse than we would ever treat a domesticated animal. They're savages. Now, beyond that, God said that they would their hand would be raised against their brother's hand would be against them. And what we witness across the Islamic world is constant warfare. So in fact, there's a website that has presented the consequence over the last 14 centuries of Muslim-on-Muslim terrorism and the millions of people who have been killed by Muslims who are Muslims. And they have lived in hostility against one another. And what God said here is that it is exactly what we witness, particularly in Iraq with the Sunni and Shia terrorizing one another. Exactly what we're witnessing right now in Syria with this proxy war between Sunni and Shia. And so this is even true when we saw in Libya, where there isn't a high percentage of our diversity between Sunni and Shia. It's mostly Sunni. But there it was tribes, brothers, who raised their hand against one another. Now, that is the universal truth. But in that universal truth, and it also says that God predicted that Muslims would live in hostility with the whole world, which they have for 1,400 years. But what is interesting is that there's far more God has to say about this upcoming war called the Magog War, which is he describes each of the countries that participate, and they're all Islamic countries. And he says that in the last days, after a peace treaty is affirmed between many nations, they will in unison come to attack Israel. And you have to wonder, say, now, how are these guys who are at each other's throats ever going to unite over any one thing? Well, the answer is the Quran is the single most anti-Semitic book ever written. Yes, it's more anti-Semitic than is Hitler's Mein Kampf. And so the one thing that unifies Muslims is their hatred of Jews and their desire to destroy Israel. And therefore, they have been easy to beguile with this myth of a place called Palestine and a people called Palestinians, whom they treated, this tribe that makes up the clan of so-called Palestinians, Muslims throughout the ages have treated them as a pariah. But when it comes to backing them in their assault on Israel, they're all united. For example, Hamas was born out of the Muslim Brotherhood. It is a Sunni organization. It's why its leader, we just read, left Syria, which is where he was headquartered, and moved to Qatar because of the uprising of Sunni Muslims against the Shia government. But while he was there in Qatar, he was hosted by Hezbollah, which is the most ruthless Shia terrorist organization. And the rockets that are being fired from Gaza into Israel are all made by Iran, who provides most of their weaponry. The one galvanizing and unifying entity in the Islamic world is their hatred of Israel and Jews, which is now focused on backing Hamas. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We're considering what is galvanizing the rage of Muslims worldwide. We find that Hamas plans open-air rallies tomorrow to promote what it says is last month's victory against Israel. This kind of reminds me of Saddam Hussein after getting his behind whooped in the first Desert Storm War, calling it the mother of all battles and putting up mighty monuments to his great victory over the United States. Hamas called it last month's terrorist attacks on Israel a great victory, and they're going to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the group's founding. Now, by the way, Hamas is a terrorist group. It is primarily a religious group that deploys terrorism. The Arab Spring revolts of the last 2 years have brought friends to Hamas, to power that are powerful allies across the region. Above all, Egypt's new president, Mohamed Morsi, whose long-banned Muslim Brotherhood is a spiritual mentor to Hamas. No, it's not a spiritual mentor to Hamas. It is Hamas's mother. Hamas was conceived by the Muslim Brotherhood. Some 170 Palestinians and six Israelis, mostly civilians on both sides, died in last month's fighting, this article reads. But in the so-called Palestinian territories, there are only civilians. There's nobody who isn't a civilian. They don't have an army. It's only civilians. That's what a jihadist is. A jihadist, a mujahideen, is very similar to what happened in America, you know, in its early days. We had militia. They're citizen fighters. So anyone that Israel kills in its resolve to defend itself in the Muslim occupied areas will be a civilian. There's no one else. Yes, Scott?
I think that's a pretty big point, too, is they are defending themselves. They're not trying to expand their territory or anything like that. They have people attacking them, and they are defending themselves.
Yeah, even when Israel expanded its territory beyond the 1948 mandate from the United Nations, it only did so because Muslims in unison had decided that they would attack Israel and destroy it. And so the only way to defend themselves was to push back and attack those who sought to destroy Israel. And so they ended up occupying all of the Sinai, could have ended up occupying all of Egypt, but the United States called them back, and they ended up giving up the Sinai, which was foolish. They controlled most of western Syria, could have captured Damascus, but they gave it all back except the Golan, which was used by Syria to lob artillery shells down on the Sea of Galilee. And they occupied most of Jordan and could have conquered all of it, but gave most of it back. They did not give the territory back on the west side of the Jordan River because it's the high ground that made their country indefensible. And they chose to control Gaza so that they would be able to be, so that Israel was defensible. And yet they gave Gaza back to the mythical Palestinian people, and look what happened once they gave it back. It became the center of the world's animosity, particularly Islamic animosity against Israel.
And all the things that they did there, that if you're defending your nation, that's all in defense. It's to make them more easily defendable.
If they had not done it, Israel would not exist today. When Israel was given statehood in 1948 as a result of the Holocaust, the first thing that Muslims did is they told the so-called, they told the Muslims living in Israel to leave so that Islamic armies could slaughter Jews more easily, more freely. And that became the first of those wars. And then we had the 67 Six-Day War, where all of Israel's neighbors collectively decided to, in unison, destroy Israel for good. That was led by Nasser in Egypt. Then you had the Yom Kippurim War, where all of Israel's Muslim enemies again decided to launch a surprise attack on Israel on Yom Kippur. And they should have prevailed. They outgunned Israel 100-1. They had superior weaponry, particularly where the war began in Gaza, where they had 100 tanks for every one Israel had, and their tanks were vastly superior. And yet Israel won. And so the only reason that Israel occupies territories that were once occupied by Muslims is because Muslims continue to fight Israel and continue to lose. Now, what's interesting here is if you look at the anniversary that they're celebrating, it's It's actually the 25th anniversary of the first so-called Palestinian uprising, or Intifada, against Israel. This was something that was conceived by the ugly one, Yasser Arafat. Yasser Arafat was the founder of the PLO and Fatah, because, again, they were both conceived by the Muslim Brotherhood. But he was the first terrorist leader of the PLO. And what happened is that the Muslims in Israel, after Israel succeeded in defeating the Islamic onslaught of its nation, they became the best educated, the most prosperous, the most free, and the healthiest Muslims in the world. There was no place on earth where Muslims were better educated, freer, or more prosperous than they were living in Israel. And that was such a blight on Islam. It was such an insult to Allah that Muslims couldn't handle it. They couldn't stomach it. And so the PLO was specifically conceived, and it called on this first Intifada to tell all Muslims who were working in Jewish-owned enterprises to, rather than work, to turn against those who were employing them and kill them. Rather than go to the schools where they were being taught, they were told to turn on their teachers and kill them. And as a result, we have the mess that we experience today. They brought this on themselves. They couldn't get out of their own ego. It is interesting when you listen to the travel log of Mr. Mashal, this terrorist thug over this Islamic terrorist organization. He was born, they say, in the West Bank in 1956. In the West, in 1956, it wasn't even the West Bank. It was Jordan. It didn't become an occupied territory until Jordan lost it to Israel. He moved to Kuwait after the 1967 Middle East War, and later to Jordan. Now, do you think that the United States began the first Gulf War to liberate Kuwait from Saddam Hussein? Saddam Hussein was an American ally. He was a secularist. He was the enemy of Iran. And yet, we went to war against him. And by the way, he was also the enemy of Al-Qaeda. He and Al-Qaeda despised one another. And we went to war against him on behalf of Kuwait, which was harboring the head of Hamas. You think we picked the wrong side once again? So he went and lived in Hamas and later in Jordan. And today now he is 56, and he has been running his Hamas terrorist organization from Damascus. But recently, this year, he left Damascus because of the Iranian-backed President Bashar Assad's war against Sunni Muslim rebels. Now, what is misleading here is that all of the weaponry that is now used by Hamas to shoot rockets into Israel is supplied by Iran. So, to give this impression that Mashal's leadership of Hamas was somehow opposed to the Iranian backing of an individual is nonsense, since Iran is his primary backer. His issue was that he is a Sunni Muslim, and Hamas is a Sunni organization, and the Sunnis in Gaza are related racially and religiously to the Sunnis who are the Mujahideen in Syria. And so he could not maintain his popularity in Gaza while being hosted by Hezbollah and Iran. But they would certainly take Iran's weapons. He now divides his time between Qatar and Cairo. Qatar is the primary weapons merchant in the Islamic world. They move primarily American weapons at America's approval, and they supply those weapons to Islamic terrorist organizations. This return, of course, by the head of Hamas is a result of the newfound confidence that has materialized since the Islamic Reformation has swept through the Middle East. Hamas is a fundamentalist organization, Mercy, who has embraced him. Mohamed Mercy, the new dictator of Egypt, is a fundamentalist Muslim. They share that in common, which is why they share a hatred of Israel. During the next segment, what I'm going to share with you are just some. I'm going to share perhaps five or six quotes from the Quran and Hadith regarding Jews, from what I have compiled of hundreds upon hundreds of anti-Semitic remarks, so that you get some flavor as to why Muslims have been universally conditioned to hate Jews. Now, this article concludes, it's the BBC, saying that Hamas's 1988 charter formally calls for the destruction of Israel. But they say, but, Mashal has sought to temper the discourse in recent years. Now, his charter still says that he wants to call for, he's calling for the destruction of Israel. His first words when he landed there is, I want the liberation of Palestine. That's the destruction of Israel. But the BCBC wants you to say, oh, but where he's tempering his discourse, backing the idea of a long-term truce in return for withdrawal to lines established ahead of the 1967 war. Yes, he wants Israel to fall back to indefensible positions so that he can do the same thing with the West Bank and with Bethlehem and with East Jerusalem that he is now doing with Gaza. But he doesn't have to shoot the rockets so far. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the break and speak of Islamic anti-Semitism. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. I had promised to share one tiny, maybe fraction of 1% of some of the most anti-Semitic comments made in Allah's Quran and Muhammad's Hadith with you this morning. So let me just jump right in. The second surah is the most anti-Semitic surah in the Quran. It's the first surah allegedly handed down when Muhammad left Mecca in shame following the satanic verses and became the terrorist at large in Yathrib, which is now Medina. So we find in Quran 2:61, by the way, that does not mean that it was the second surah handed down. It means that the Quran is in a jumbled mess without context and chronology, because this was about the 80th or so that was in chronological order. It reads, humiliation and wretchedness were stamped on the Jews, and they were visited with Allah's wrath. So, Jews had wretchedness and humiliation stamped on them by the Islamic God, and the Islamic God visited the Jews with his wrath. Quran 4:44. Have you considered those to whom a portion of the book was given? You say Muhammad acknowledges that his Quran doesn't stand alone. He says, oh, no, God revealed the Torah, the prophets, the Psalms, and also what he calls the Injil, which is a corruption of Evangelion, which is the Greek word for good news, which has been corrupted to Gospels. So have you considered to whom a portion of the book was given? They traffic in error and desire that you would go astray. Allah has full knowledge of your enemies. So this is kind of the mindset of a lot of conspiracy theorists, that the Jews traffic in error and they desire that people would go astray. But Allah has full knowledge of your enemies. So again, who are the Jews called? They are enemies who traffic in lies. Of the Jews, there are those who displace words from their right places. So what the claim is by Muhammad, since he claims that his Quran confirms the Torah, when it's the antithesis of the Torah, he claims that the Jews were originally given the Torah by Allah, but then they changed all of the words of the Torah. Now, of course, based upon the extant evidence that we have, such a claim is absolutely impossible because of the fact that you just look at the timing of things. The Torah was revealed in 1450 BCE, and the Quran was revealed around 620 CE. And we have, by that time, hundreds of thousands of copies of portions of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. So this notion that Jews went back and they changed them, and they got every extant copy found anywhere in the world, all changed the same way, is, there's a word for that. We call it stupid. So they displaced their words from the right places. We hear, they say, we hear and we disobey. With a twist of their tongues, they slander religion. This religion is a code word here. They slander Islam. Allah has cursed them for their disbelief. Moving on. For the iniquity of the Jews, we made unlawful for them certain, and the Quran just skips a beat there, but people will fill in foods, in that they hindered many from Allah's way, that they took usury. You know, the Jews in Yathrib loaned money for the initial Muslims to survive, and they charged interest on it, as would be expected. So because Muhammad didn't want to pay it back and hated the concept of interest, he made usury a great sin. Though they were forbidden, and they devoured men's wealth. Again, that's ubiquitous in conspiracy theories, that the Jews are the bankers of the world, and they're evil schemers who scheme to devour men's wealth on false pretenses, this reads. This is from Quran 4:160. We have prepared for them that reject Islam a painful doom. Say to the, this is now Quran 5:59. Say to the people of the book, code name for Jews, those who incurred the curse of Allah and his wrath, because it is those that he transformed into apes and swine. So, from a Muslim's perspective, according to their God, in the last surah revealed that God transforms Jews into monkeys and pigs. But you Jews went back on your word and were lost losers and became apes despised and hated. We made an example of you, reads Quran 2:64. And it goes on and on and on. The most anti-Semitic book ever written is the Quran.
I had tried everything. I'd cut back the amount of food I was eating. I was lifting weights and jogging, but nothing was working. My body was literally starving for minerals and trace.